So I lost count, but how many love words did y'all come up with in First John? 20, someone said 29, 30, 30. Well, whatever it is, that's a lot of love talk. The writer of this letter does go on about love, doesn't he? Because love for this John is the point. Love is from God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. For whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. And love for John is anything but mushy and sentimental. Christian love is hard and bright and shining like a diamond. And loving God means loving one another. Alas. Today, a little bit later, I want to share some stories from the Desert Fathers, or Abbas. They were early Christians living mostly in the 3rd to 6th centuries who sought to grow closer to God by withdrawing from worldly society and living in the desert. But though they lived solitary lives, they did share the wisdom they gained through teaching and offering spiritual counsel to others. And through their writings, which continue to influence God seekers to this day. There were desert ammas, mothers, by the way. In fact, some think that the desert moms outnumbered the desert pops. But surprise, surprise, far fewer of their stories and writings have come down to us. Anyway, beloved, John said, since God loved us so much, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God lives in us, and God's love is perfected in us. Of course, the reverse is also true. If perfect love casts out fear, perhaps perfect fear casts out love. And I know it's one thing to love God, but another thing entirely to love living and breathing humans. Sometimes it's especially hard to love strangers. Sometimes it's especially hard to love the people you're close to. But as John says, really, it should be easier to love human beings whom we can see than it is to love God whom we can't see. I mean, to really love. Not just say we love. And yes, fear can hold us back. But as we grow towards God, our fear grows less. Well, ideally, except that we often begin as children loving so purely, and then we learn fear as we grow up, fear of others and fear of God. We're taught that we are not good enough, not deserving of God's love. So we try to earn it. Or we walk away from God altogether until, perhaps, by God's grace, we learn or relearn that God is love and we are love. One desert father, Abba Mias, asked a young monk, "If your coat is torn, do you throw it away?" The monk replied, "No, of course not. I mend the tear and use it again." "If you are so careful about your old coat," the Abba said, "will not God be equally careful of God's creatures?" Isn't that what we say we believe? That in Christ, God mends our broken places and uses us again and again for love. Only as we grow in love with God again does our love cast out fear. But if loving God means loving our brothers and sisters, our neighbors, then we know how difficult it is. So it must be learned, practiced. And that is the wisdom that the early Christians knew. love of God and people takes work. In the 6th century, Saint Benedict, greatly influenced by the desert moms and pops, he counseled that we should never forget that we are always beginners on the path to God. 20th century monk Thomas Merton said, "There are only 3 stages to this work: to be a beginner, to be more of a beginner, and to be only a beginner." And accepting, even seeking beginner status means we get to try again, always. Because like I said, loving can be hard work. I recall an experience a friend of mine had. She was walking down the sidewalk here in New York when she passed by a bedraggled, wheelchair-bound man. He muttered something, and she reached for a dollar to give him. "No," he said. "Can you give me a push?" "Oh, sure," she said. "Where do you want to go?" "To the store," he said. Well, he was sitting right outside a deli, so she asked, "Which store?" "The grocery store," he said. And since there was a grocery store just down the block and across the street, she gamely took hold of the handles of his wheelchair and began to push him down the sidewalk. When they got to the corner, he said, "Where are you taking me?" "To that grocery store across the street," she said. "That's a supermarket," he said. "I want the grocery store." Well, you can imagine how my friend felt, but it seemed too late to turn back now, and she did want to help. So she said, "Sir, that's the only grocery store I know of near here. Where do you want to go?" "Over there," he said, pointing across the other street. And so she turned his chair towards the other crosswalk. "Wait for the light," he yelled. I'm going to, sir. I'm just getting you pointed in the right direction." The light changed, and they got halfway across when the man started yelling again. "Be careful, be careful. There's cars coming." "Sir, they're just making the turn, but it's okay. They're stopping for us. Don't worry." "Be careful," he continued to yell, putting his foot down to stop the wheelchair. So there they were in the middle of Second Avenue, holding up traffic with people beginning to stare and the light about to change. "Sir," she pleaded, "please lift your foot up so I can get us out of the street." He finally did, on the condition that she turn around again, and she ended up pushing him right back to where they started. "Sir," she asked with desperation, "is this where you want to be?" But he merely turned his head away in a huff, as if he had had quite enough of her. Story reminded me.